a lotion thing. He took something I shared and used it against me. Dirty traitor.
Yeah, let's not let that halo slip too far there, Evie. You did strike first, Amelia reminds me. His decaffeinated self walked into a wall in front of my office. I peek my head around the shower curtain.
He did? I say, gleefully, wishing I'd been there to see it. My smile straightens as she stares at me with a single, stern eyebrow raised.
Come on, I whine, breaking under the pressure. It was coffee. I struck first with coffee. Besides, he pulled Dan Prince away from me, swapped out the Vanity Fair photographer for his brother without consulting me, and ditched our joint meeting with the chatty retreat coordinator. I wanted him to know I wasn't going to roll over.
So all he did was up the stakes, Amelia says calmly.
And if I know anything about you, you're already plotting retaliation.
You're damn right I am. Jess, I say, I'm going to need you to do some unsavory things. She looks over at me from where she's sitting on the bathroom counter.
Am I going to be doing anything illegal?
Not sure yet. She rolls her eyes.
Will you at least take the fall if I get busted?
Absolutely.
I'd like to go on record as saying I think this is a bad idea, but fine. I'm in.
You know, as Carter's friend, I feel I should step in here, Steph says. I tilt my head.
Perhaps you'd like to see the inside of your bathtub?
She holds her hands up to stop me from moving.
No, no, not necessary.
She looks over her shoulder toward the sound of the doorbell.
I'll be right back.
Slipping back behind the curtain, I pick up the bar of soap and lather the loofah again. The shoot is next week, and he may have won this battle, but I'm winning the war.
Before I forget, Jess says, I was originally coming into your office today to ask if you'd seen the email from accounting. They're doing an audit, and I need copies of all your expense reports.
Audit? Daryl repeats.
Yeah, Jess says. It has something to do with the private equity firm that backed P&D in the merge. I guess outside money means a closer eye on things. They want everyone's records, even mine.
Just reconciling the books post-merge, Amelia says. Pretty normal stuff. Footsteps carry down the hall, and I peek out again to see Steph walking back into the bathroom with Daryl's assistant, Eric, right behind her.
What are you doing?
I shout, clutching the shower curtain to my chest.
I have my eyes closed, Eric says. I needed to drop off these contracts for Daryl.
As if to illustrate that he really does have his eyes closed, he runs into the door jamb.
Right here,
Daryl says, maneuvering her way over to him.
Thanks for coming all the way out here, Eric.
What are you all doing, anyway?
Eric peeks, one eye open to glance around the room.
Secret meeting in a bathroom?
He squeezes his eyes closed again when he catches sight of me in the tub and offers me a small wave.
Oh, hi, Miss Abby.
Plotting revenge against one of your own?
Daryl tells him with the cap of a pen between her teeth. She turns him, holding the papers up against his rather broad, muscled back so she can use him as a makeshift table.
You might be wondering why Evie is sitting in a nest of orange bubbles.
I mean,
he says quietly.
The question had crossed my mind, but Miss Baker from HR is here, so I figured this is a don't-ask-don't-tell situation.
Amelia nods.
Good instinct.
Someone put bronzer in the lotion on Evie's desk,
Daryl says, and Eric is unable to hold in a single, loud burst of laughter. In a whisper, Daryl adds,
Carter did it.
Amelia slides her hand down her face.
Daryl, don't reveal names to the civilian, I say, a little loudly.
Relax, she says.
Eric is cool. Hell, he might even have some ideas.
She turns him back around, handing him the stack of signed papers.
You might be pretty terrible with phones, but you're a genius with computers.
She smiles winningly up at him.
No offense. Could you create a program that automatically reconciles our expenses with invoices?
Jess quips dryly from her perch on the counter. Daryl waves her off.
Boring, Jess. We're talking sabotage.
He shrugs.
I could be Team Estrogen. What do you need? I could wipe Carter's credit score. create a warrant for his arrest?
My stomach gives a surprising lurch. I don't actually want him to go to prison.
I could hack into his email, Eric suggests. Maybe rearrange his calendar?
My interest is momentarily piqued.
You can do all that?
We're treated to a sexy little lift of his chin.
Sure, I can do pretty much anything.
A room full of women watches Eric when he says this, absolutely taking his word for it. Finally, Amelia covers her ears.
No way this won't end badly.
She's right, I say. I appreciate it, but I'm going to have to keep it more zany hijinks and less criminal mastermind. Steph throws one of Morgan's ducky washcloths in my direction, and the group files out of the bathroom, leaving me to finish up and ponder revenge alone. Climbing out onto the bath mat, I look up and, through the steam on the mirror, I see something hanging on the door behind me. Carter's suit. I smile at my reflection. Zany hijinks it is. He does call me evil, after all. If I'm going to the dark side anyway, I might as well do it right.
Chapter 16. Carter. It's been 2 days, and I haven't been able to stop thinking about what Evie said to me.
You're doing it again, aren't you?
I lie.
No.
Michael Christopher looks up from me across the table at Creme de la Crepe.
Yes, you are, he nods to Jonah. Doesn't he always do this?
Jonah nods. I look between them.
What do I always do? Obsess over something someone might have said, or the possibility that, heaven forbid, someone might not like you. You've been like this your entire life. Maybe that's why you've escalated this thing with Evie. She doesn't like you, and so you make sure it's because of something you've done, rather than the possibility she might not like you as a person.
Ow. That hits me right where it hurts.
No, she was pretty clear. She used to like me, but was glad to find out who I really am before we got too involved. Essentially, I'm a prick.
You're not a prick, Michael says, and waves a spoon in front of Morgan, trying to divert her attention from basically every other moving thing in the restaurant.
You're just dumb.
Don't lie to him, MC. He's a total prick,
Jonah says, and I glare at him. Aside from a few texts to set up things for the photo shoot, Jonah and I haven't really talked since I found out about his little money situation. I invited him to join us for breakfast, so I could go over the details for Friday and reiterate how important it is not to fuck this up. So far, all he's done is stare at his phone and make wisecracks at my expense.
It's nauseating to think how much I have riding on my brother here. Brad thinks I brought him in because I have some sort of master plan, which means that if Jonah screws up and the shoot is any flavor of diva, there's no way Brad won't find out. There would be no coming back from that. The new contract will be Evie's, and I'll be on a plane back to my parents' house.
He's not a prick,
Steph says to Jonah. Apparently she caught this last bit from him as she was returning from the bathroom.
Why would you say that?
It's heartwarming to see both MC and Steph sticking up for me, but let's be real. I deserve at least some shit for the other day with Evie.
You've been quiet today, I say to her. Everything okay?
Yeah, just, you know, work, she says, repeatedly stabbing her ice water with a straw. She seems off, but when I look at what she's eating, who could blame her? Her husband is shoveling down the ooh-la-la, an enormous plate of waffles smothered in Nutella, strawberries, bananas, and mango, and she's having egg whites with sautéed spinach before she heads to yoga.
Yoga?
As if that's not bad enough, she'll essentially be doing it on an empty stomach.
I think I'm only now realizing how hard it must be to be a woman.
Too thin or not thin enough? Do your job flawlessly, but don't show up any of the men. Speak up, but don't be bitchy. Smile. And then you have people like Brad totally playing into it. I rub my finger along the side of my water glass, watching the condensation drip onto the napkin underneath it. I'm feeling like a dick for playing into it myself.
Do you ever have one of those moments when something seems like a good idea, and then you realize later that you are, in fact, a total fucking moron?
Michael doesn't miss a beat. Every day. Jonah looks up from his phone again, as if the topic of my failures is the only conversation worthy of his attention. What did you do? I jab a piece of sausage with my fork. Nothing. Never mind. Come on, he says. In case you haven't noticed, my life is in the toilet right now. I'm a total fucking moron. Give me something here. His honesty catches me off guard. It's just a series of really stupid things that snowballed, I tell them. And now I'm legitimately afraid to go to work on Monday. Steph coughs. Okay, Jonah says. Let's see, where to start, I say. I guess we could go with when our boss knocked Evie's breakfast into the trash because he's a sexist dick, and I just sat there and watched. Or when I let her sit through a meeting with two of her shirt buttons undone. Two very important buttons, I clarify. She didn't tell me about that, Steph says, and her expression is a little terrifying. How were the tits? Jonah asks, bringing it all back to the important issues. Nice? Before I can reach across and smack him, Steph does it, then turns to Michael. Did you know about all this?
I heard that something untoward had occurred, he says, choosing his words carefully. I told him it was wrong, very wrong.
He gives me a stern expression that says he'll murder me in my sleep if I so much as hint at the truth. Steph groans. I knew about Jonah and the weird Dan Prince situation, and that you'd flaked out on the meeting with the retreat coordinator. All of that is professional stuff between the two of you. But playing into Brad's sexism? That makes me angry at you, Carter. It's hard enough for a woman to be taken seriously in this business, and seen as a person with a brain and not an object. Men get passes for acting like it's 1960 and every woman in the office is their secretary. Evie will have to be smarter, faster, and better at her job than you are, for possibly less money and a whole lot less recognition, all while appearing totally grateful for it. I want to crawl under the table.
That's exactly what I told him, Michael says, nodding feverishly. That it undermines her credibility. Didn't I tell you that, Carter? If I had a shame bell, I would follow him around. Very disappointed in you.
I felt trapped, I say. If I said something, would she have been more embarrassed? Plus, she would know I was looking at her boobs. Which you were, I'm sure, Steph says. Well, yeah, because they're great. She reaches across and smacks me this time.
I don't see the problem, Jonas says. None of this sounds bad so far.
That's not very reassuring, I say, and then look back at Steph. Like I said, it escalated. I don't even know how it happened. One minute I was in line at the store getting caffeinated K-cups for the office, and the next I look over and see this giant display of bronzer. To summarize, I'm pretty sure I'm going to end up in a ditch somewhere.
Wait, is this the girl from the party?
Jonah asks around a mouthful of potatoes. My potatoes.
The one you couldn't close the deal with?
I toss him an icy glance.
Why are you even here?
You asked me to come, dickbag. You wanted to lecture me about the stupid shoot. You do understand this is what I do, right? He straightens, a sign he's getting riled up. You think I've made it this far because I need you to show me how to do my job? Annoyance flares in my chest, but I do my best to push it down. I reacted almost the same way when Evie told me it was time to move on Dan. Just remember, I made sure they could work with your schedule and the new shoot time is 11, I tell him. We're doing makeup at 8:30. Be there at 9. Don't be late. And no attitude either. I put my neck out for you on this, not to mention Evie's.
Fucking hell, I'll be there, Carter.
My brother shoves his phone into his pocket and stands.
Why are you such a dick all the time?
Dick! Morgan screams, and we watch Jonah storm out of the restaurant. On that note, Steph says, checking the time, my class starts in 10. She kisses each of us on the head, Morgan twice, grabs her gym bag and heads out. Michael Christopher cuts up some more of his waffle into bite-sized pieces and slides them onto his daughter's plate. But Morgan, tired of sitting quietly, has climbed out of her seat and relocated to my lap. Michael watches us, his face slowly melting into a floppy expression of fondness. I know what he's thinking. He wants this for me. He wants us to meet for breakfast on Sundays and watch our kids play together. He wants our wives to be the best of friends. I don't need to be a genius to know he still wants me to find that with Evie. I'd be lying if I didn't say I wanted it a little, too. I was never on the right page with Gwen, but something tells me I might have found it with Evie. We'd probably kill each other first, but who knows, that might have been part of the fun. You have your dad's face on, I tell him.
I do not have my dad's face on.
Yeah, you do. I lift a hand, drawing a vague circle in the air. You get all glassy-eyed and sentimental, like you're mentally embroidering our names on a quilt.
All this talk of sabotage is going to make it really awkward for me to make a toast at your guys' wedding. I hate to break it to you, but I think that ship sailed about the time I was refilling her lotion bottle on Friday afternoon. Michael picks up his mug and looks at me over the top of it, smug.
I forgot Steph had a cat for a week when she was on a trip in college, and I'm still here. You never know. Besides, you seem strangely optimistic. Dare I say chipper for a man who plans to die this week? One might even think you're enjoying this a little.
My face says no, but the jump in my pulse as he mirrors my earlier thoughts says otherwise. Evil would cut off my balls and hand them to me if she thought it would give her an edge. And while that's not particularly appealing, the idea that I have to constantly keep up is. Evie is smarter, and there's a rush of adrenaline in having to work to stay one step ahead. If only I knew how to do that. Mildly obsessing over my next move, I barely sleep Sunday night and feel like a walking time bomb the next morning. I'm not sure what I'm expecting. Burning bags of excrement on my porch, to be accosted by hired ninjas in the stairway. Both of these possibilities seem highly unlikely, and yet I look out the peephole before I leave, check around the corner as I head to the stairs, even check beneath the hood of my car before I start it. Get a grip, Carter. I try to laugh off my nerves as I turn the key and the ignition comes to life without exploding into a ball of fire. Maybe the best retaliation is no retaliation at all. Damn you, Evie. Traffic is better than usual this morning, and with my second cup of coffee down by the time I get to work, I've regained a bit of my nerve. Justin is out sick today, and I make small talk with a couple of the interns as I pass. Kylie looks frazzled about something, but I steer clear, stopping by the Keurig in the break room before officially starting my day. It's regular, I check. My door is still locked, a good sign. Evie's light is on, but her door is closed, and if I'm careful not to jangle my keys or make any unnecessary noise, it's because I'm considerate, not scared. Nothing has changed. My computer is where I left it. My stapler is still on the corner of my desk. The words Die Carter Die aren't scribbled on the wall in poop or blood. I'm calling it a win. Still, I close the door quietly and tiptoe to my desk. I log into the network, wincing, but the computer seems normal, too. I pull up an address and answer a few emails, grab the papers I need, and then casually lean to the side where I can usually get a view of Evie's legs. No dice. I'm just about to head out when my phone rings. This is Carter.
Hello?
I think the caller says. I fiddle with the volume. Hello? I repeat. This is Carter Aaron. Hello? The voice on the other end is so faint I find myself squinting as I try to hear. I'm sorry, I think we have a bad connection. Can you call back? Hello? The line disconnects only to ring a moment later. Carter Aaron, I say.
Carter, this is Caleb,
I make out. Caleb Ferraz, Dan Prince's manager. We've been playing phone tag for 2 weeks now. Caleb, there's... Can you hear me? I think there's something wrong with my phone. I'm shouting. I look at the handset, shaking it before bringing it back to my ear. Can you call my cell?
Can't,
I think I make out, followed by taking off. There are more words, but I'm not sure whether I'm hearing them or just making them up. Dan.
Talk. Trip. Weeks.
Fuck. Caleb, send me a text when you can, and I'll talk to you soon. I think he says goodbye, but I'm not even sure. I hang up and dial Michael Christopher's number. He answers, and it's more of the same. I think he can hear me, but there's no way to tell because I can't hear him. I send him a text, letting him know I'll explain later. Grabbing the needed files, I head out, a little disappointed when I find that Evie's door is still closed. Why am I in a hurry to run into her? I'm sure she's furious, and the last thing I'll see before I die will be an orange-tinted Evie with her hands wrapped around my neck. With Justin gone, I stop at Kylie's desk on my way out. She's talking to some guy from the mailroom, so I pull out my phone while I wait. Just be sure that anything with a P.O. box goes straight to Mr. Kingman, okay? He was very specific about that. Post office box, got it, the kid says, typing a note into a little handheld machine. Later, Kai. Kylie peeks around the departing employee and smiles widely at me. Carter, how are you?
I'm well, how are you?
Great, I'm gonna grab lunch today?
I make a show of looking disappointed when, in fact, I'm a little relieved to have an excuse. I'm meeting a client, I say, and her face falls into an attractive pout. Something tells me that look almost always works.
I was just leaving, but I wanted to see if we could get someone to check my phone.
Your phone?
Something's wrong with the volume, I tell her. She follows me down the hall, picking up my handset and holding it to her ear, pressing the volume buttons a few times before unscrewing the earpiece.
Oh, she says, and I lean in too.
There's a piece of tape in here. That's weird.
Carefully, she removes the offending item and puts the handset back together. I stare at the curl of plastic in her outstretched palm.
Yeah, weird.
On her way out, she leans against the doorway instead.
Glad I could help. Don't be afraid to call if you, need anything else, she says, pausing at the sound of Evie's opening door. Or want to grab lunch sometime.
Evie steps out into the hall and pauses behind where Kylie stands, now straighter in awareness. With a little smile and a quiet, Hi, Evie. Kylie heads down the hall. Leaning against her open doorway with a pair of, thank God, normal-colored arms folded across her chest, Evie smiles at me.
Didn't mean to interrupt. Close your door next time.
Ignoring this, I tell her,
funny story, my phone wasn't working, and Kylie helped me figure out why. Seems someone put a piece of tape over the earpiece. Wonder who would have done that.
No idea, Evie says with a shrug. I just got in. But if we're going by the number of people who are out to make you look bad, there's probably a few to choose from.
What is that supposed to mean? I ask, genuinely offended now and following when she pushes away from her door and heads into the break room.
People like me. You're the one they're afraid of.
She pulls a mug down from the cupboard and pours herself a cup of coffee.
Okay, Carter.
What do you mean?
I stop in my tracks.
Don't do that.
She slowly pours cream into her cup and looks up at me.
Do what?
Pretend that none of this gets to you. Play some juvenile mind game.
You're the one who followed me down here.
Unaffected, she puts the cream away and heads for the door.
Fine, I say.
Fine. Her evil laugh rings down the hallway.
Chapter 17. Evie. Steph! Taping Carter's phone was pretty great. So simple. Maybe my best idea ever. Evie, did you do something to Carter's suit? The one that was in the bathroom? What? I can't hear you. I'm going through Laurel Canyon. We're texting, asshole. Did you? Maybe a little. In which case, I'm going to change my previous answer and say that this was my best idea ever. Ugh, sigh. Don't worry. A little fun. Totally harmless. You realize this isn't normal behavior, right?
Chapter 18. Carter. Things have not been pretty at P&D. Monday was the stupid tape incident. Tuesday, I snuck a pretty healthy splash of Dave's ghost pepper hot sauce into Evie's burrito, and quite enjoyed her angry, sexy little growl as she ran back to the break room and chugged down some half and half we keep in the fridge. She returned the favor on Wednesday by soaking my desk chair so my ass was visibly wet for the rest of my meetings. She didn't come straight to the office Thursday, so I didn't get to enjoy how she might have looked with all the glitter I put in the vents of her car. But it was a chilly morning, and I'm sure the glitter got pretty sticky when it blew out with all that nice warm air. Admittedly, after that I was so paranoid she'd booby-trapped my office that I could barely touch anything without wincing. She stopped by at the end of the day, still a little sparkly around the hairline,
just in time to see me bite into what I thought was a candy apple from Kylie, but was actually a candy onion from Evie. I was thwarted in my desire to murder her by the news that Steve Gaynor in television was let go. Nothing like a dose of reality to put things in perspective. We're supposed to be on set with Jonah by 8:30 on Friday, but my evil paranoia has me there by 8, standing outside the locked studio, shivering. My jacket feels tight, my pants too, and I can barely wrap my arms around my shoulders to keep warm. Great, all the stress eating is taking a toll. About half of the crew arrives a few minutes after I do, including Jamie's manager, who, as soon as we get inside, begins arguing with the Vanity Fair creative director and one of Jonah's assistants about the lighting. "Carter, hey," Allie says, excusing herself and crossing over to where craft services are just starting to set up behind me. "Hey." Just like Brad mentioned when he initially placed Jamie on my list, Allie is what you would call a hands-on manager. Whereas some managers are just yes-men, there to make their client happy and get a producer credit along the way, Allie is involved in almost every aspect of Jamie's career. My life will be a hell of a lot easier because of it. "Do we know what time to expect Jamie?" "She just got here," she says, nodding over to a doorway leading to the dressing rooms. "She's in her room with her trainer." "Great. That's how we roll." Her eyes follow some of the caterers as they begin unloading. She taps one of them on the shoulder as she sets down a tray of cookies and points to the rest wrapped in cellophane. "There are no raisins in any of these, right?" The woman looks at the label on the bottom of a tray and then consults a well-worn clipboard. "Food allergy? I didn't see that on the order." "Fussy actress," Allie corrects, and the caterer offers her an understanding smile. "Let's see," the woman says, scanning the pages before stopping on an itemized list. "We have coffee and tea service, soda, fruit juices, ice water with assorted citrus, energy drinks, chocolate chip cookies, assorted danishes, sports bars." She rattles off a seemingly endless list, flipping through the papers again before smiling up at Allie. "The only raisin should be in the trail mix, and it will be clearly labeled." Allie gives her the thumbs up and turns back to me. I snag a cookie from the tray and then pause, looking down at it. My suit is becoming increasingly uncomfortable, like Spanx. Have I put on that much weight? Absently, I touch my stomach. "Jamie is fussy about raisins?" Allie nods. "She's one of the most level-headed actresses I've worked with, but Lord, is she particular about her food." I raise a brow, and Allie waves me off. "Don't worry, she's not a diva or anything, and would never hold up a shoot. She's just really, really particular." "As in particular with the side of losing it?" "Borderline?" she says, grinning. "But regardless, that's why I'm here." Her phone dings and she swipes across the screen. "Which is more than I can say for Seamus. I'll take care of Jamie, you just make sure he's on his best behavior today." "Seamus is Evelyn Abbey's problem, not mine." I casually scan the room for Evil over Allie's shoulder, not sure if I feel more pleased or disappointed when I don't see her. "Good luck to her," is all I have to say. He's so used to having his head filled with adoration on that YouTube channel of his that he can't take a simple no. I know it's a sign of the times, but he got his start on the same platform where my 9-year-old uploads her What's in My Backpack videos. Kids today want to be famous. You ask them famous for what, and they don't care. Did you know that at Seamus' first YouTube photo shoot, he wanted his own toilet seat? And Kanye's graduation album played on a continual loop? And when he didn't like the color scheme on one of the set designs, he said he'd be back when it was repainted? Allie scans the area. He will lose the plot one day, mark my words. I nod, having heard all of this, and more. If you feel that way, then why on earth did you encourage Jamie to take this part? She lowers her voice. Because Jamie needs this role, and right now Seamus is hot. Let him pay $600 for a hipster reflexologist to blow marijuana smoke in his face and balance his fucking chakras. I don't care. But here, he'd better show up and do the work, not fly off the handle. Pretty early in his game to start showing his ass. I laugh. I'll be sure to give my colleague the heads up and keep those raisins away from Jamie. I will. Allie switches off her phone and slips it into her pocket. Let me know when the photographer is here. I give her a tight smile when I realize that means Jonah still hasn't materialized. Will do. I turn and almost run right into Evie. Shit. Oops, didn't see you eavesdropping behind me.
Eavesdropping? She pulls back to give me an amused smile. Oh, Carter, you love hearing yourself talk enough for the both of us.
Like they have a mind of their own, my eyes quickly skirt down the length of her body and back up again. She's wearing a sleeveless button-down shirt dress, with the top two buttons open, exposing collarbone and just a hint of cleavage, and I'm left momentarily speechless by her shoulders and her boobs. When I meet her gaze, the corner of her mouth twitches, and I know that I'm busted. I see all your buttons are accounted for today, I say.
See? That wasn't so hard. You'll learn this workplace etiquette with more seasoning, sport.
I turn as she slips past me. It was simply a battle between workplace etiquette and a complete lack of interest, I call after her. Lack of interest won. She stops, spinning slowly to face me, and I feel sweat prick at the back of my neck. My suit seems to shrink further. Instinctively, I tighten my fingers around the cookie in one hand and the phone in the other, feeling every one of my stupid texts with Michael Christopher flash before my eyes. I can't help but worry the sentiment in each is scrolling across my face, too. I nearly put my face in Evie's boobs in her office. Keep reminding me that she's Lucifer. Right. Lucifer. Remember, Carter, it's essentially her or you. Did I touch a nerve? I ask. There's the slightest twitch in her jaw, one so slight it would probably go unnoticed by someone who hasn't memorized every inch of her face. Her posture becomes less rigid, her expression suddenly softer.
How are you feeling today? You good?
Confused by this change of tactic, I instinctively want to cover my crotch. Instead, I straighten, taking the smallest step back.
Why? No reason, she says with a casual shrug. You just look a little, I don't know, fluffier than normal.
There's a distinct emphasis on the word fluffier, and I feel naked and afraid as her eyes drop all the way down my body and back up before she takes the cookie from me.
Are you depressed? She asks, tossing it into the trash.
Smiling sweetly at me, she coos, Carter, you don't need that. It takes a minute for the pattern of her questions to register. How are you feeling today? You good? Fluffier than normal? And then I get it. Evie fucked with my suit. I would strangle her right now if I had more range of motion inside this tiny jacket. But instead, as I watch her walk triumphantly down the hall, I pull my phone from my pocket, open the saved post in my browser, and hit submit.
One, two.
She pulls up short as her phone rings, retrieving it from her purse. Evelyn Abbey speaking. A pause, and her forehead furrows.
What? No, I think there's been some mistake. I don't have a car for sale.
I rock back on my heels. My bad mood is a distant memory.
No, she says again. I told you, I don't have... Yes, that's my number, but I'm not selling a car, and definitely not at that price.
Ending the call, she turns to leave, but her phone rings again.
Hello?
No, there's been some sort of mix-up. Someone else just...
No, I don't have a car for sale. Can I ask where you saw this?
Craigslist?
And the Times?
She looks back at me from over her shoulder.
And what did the ad say?
A moment of silence.
Tesla Model S, one owner, $1,000 or best offer?
She shouts and hangs up the phone, turning to me.
You did this!
It's my turn to shrug.
Did what? I didn't know you were selling a car. Good for you, taking a chance on the LA public transit system.
That's it, Aaron. She growls, walking back to me and pointing a finger at my chest.
No more freebies, no more help. From now on, you're on your own.
Narcissist much? She leans in close and I get a whiff of her. It slaps me somewhere nostalgic, making me dizzy.
Just do your job today, okay? She growls. Watch that your brother doesn't screw this up and make sure Jamie doesn't slow Seamus down.
Come 9:30, Jonah is still nowhere to be found. By 10, I've almost worn a hole through the studio floor, and possibly the seams of these pants, when he comes strolling in, talking on his cell phone, carrying a takeout coffee cup and sporting dark sunglasses. Evie, thankfully, is in Seamus's dressing room trying to calm the actor down.
"What the fuck, Jonah?" I say, crossing to him.
The fabric between my thighs chafes audibly with each step. Swish, swish, swish. "Nice of you to stop by." He looks up at me over the top of his lenses.
"Chill out."
"Chill out," I repeat under my breath, turning away and pushing a hand through my hair. The seams of my jacket protest.
"We moved things to accommodate your schedule."
"Would you relax?" he says, clearly agitated now. "My assistant has everything set up, and I've already gone through the shoot list with the creative director. I'll do a final check of lights, and we can get started by 11, exactly like we discussed. Just get out of my fucking space."
If my brother came with one set of instructions, they would say, "Does not play well with others."
In school, he used to get into fights almost daily with kids who teased him about his ever-present camera. Now, as an adult, he just doesn't care what anyone thinks about him. As long as he's making money, he's fine. It's something I've never been able to understand. His assistant took care of it this time, but what Jonah fails to realize is that at some point, somewhere, someone will decide he's not worth the hassle.
Now the crew are annoyed about being kept waiting. The talent have both returned to their dressing room in varying states of frustration. The editors are all typing wildly into their phones because the photographer I arranged has them already behind schedule, and Evie, aside from telling off people wanting to buy her car, has been wearing her best "I told you so" expression since the moment 8:30 came and went without any sign of my brother. Thank God I posted that ad this morning. The delight in seeing Evie lose it is the only thing keeping me together. I'm halfway down the hall on my way to Jamie's dressing room when the screaming starts.
"Who put raisins in these cookies?"
I knock on the partially open door and poke my head inside. "Is everything okay?"
By this point, Jamie is dramatically retching into a garbage can, and Allie is standing over her, rubbing her back.
"There was a raisin in the cookie," Allie says to me before turning back to Jamie.
"Honey, let's take it down a notch before people start talking. If I have to get makeup back in here to clean you up, I'm going to lose my mind."
"Aren't those the ones from Craft Services?" I ask, picking up one to examine it before turning it over.
"We looked at these earlier. I don't remember any."
I stop and stare down at the cookie in my hand. It looks like someone has pressed raisins into the underside of the cookie. Lots of them. Raisins that weren't there earlier this morning.
I swing my head around to face the door. "I'll be back." I set down the cookie and head toward the door. "Allie, the photographer is here. Can you get Jamie prepped to start soon? I'm sorry about all this, by the way."
"Carter, they're raisins, not amphetamines. She'll be fine."
I nod, offering Jamie another apologetic smile before I step out and close the door behind me. I am fuming. Evie is with Seamus and his assistant in his dressing room. If I had any doubt that she was the one responsible, those hopes are dashed as soon as she sees my face. Her eyes light up, cheeks flush.
"Sorry to interrupt," I growl, poking my head through the doorway.
"Evie, I need to talk to you."
"Sorry, Carter, we're just in the middle of something," she says, but pointedly looks down at the floor.
"Unfortunately, it's important. Excuse us for just a second, guys." With a calm touch that surprises me, I reach for Evie's arm and gently lead her down a narrow hallway and into a sound mixing room, empty but for some cables, a dim fluorescent light on in the corner, and equipment locked up along the far wall, my pants swishing the entire way.
"What's that sound?"
she asks with a grin, but I ignore her. My hand around her arm is shaking. I'm so furious. Furious and hot. I'm really hot. These pants are tight as hell.
"You are fucking unreal."
"What the hell are you doing?" she says. "We're minutes away from starting the light tests." The door closes behind us, sealing us in the dim light, and Evie wrenches her arm out of my grip.
"We don't have time for this. We can take 5 minutes to fucking talk."
"So talk.
Is this where we are now? We'll just keep tearing little pieces out of each other?"
"Oh, I'm sorry," she says, hands to her hips. "I can't hear your man-baby words over the 75 phone calls from people wanting to buy my non-existent Tesla."
"Did I do the lotion thing to get back at you for the coffee?" I begin.
"Yeah. Do I regret it?"
"Hell no. I can still hear the echo of your frustrated roar from the other end of the hall."
She takes a swaggering step closer.
That must be rough, being the consummate people-pleaser that you are. How depressing to need every single person's approval.
That would be a first for you, right? I ask, leaning in. Caring what other people think?
Only because I don't need to be everyone's best friend to get the job done.
Or anyone's, for that matter. Her face is so close to mine, brown eyes flashing.
Are we really getting into this again? She asks, shaking her head at me. Carter, look at this from my side. No one ever told a guy he needs to be nicer at work to get ahead.
I open my mouth to respond, but snap it shut. Evie moves in even closer, close enough that she has to tilt her head to look up at me. We could be embracing. It takes every ounce of restraint I have not to glance down to her dress.
I tried nice, Carter, she says, and here I am, fighting to keep my job. A job I'm more qualified for, if we're being honest. You might be the one everyone likes, but I'm the one who gets the job done. So stay out of my way.
Her words bounce around the otherwise silent room, and I'm left a little stunned. The truth of what Steph said about being a woman in this business comes rushing back, and the weight of guilt settles deep in my stomach, which is laughable because the last thing Evie would want from me is pity.
Fine, I say.
She clearly didn't expect this.
Fine?
I nod.
Yeah.
I take a couple of steps back, so I'm leaning against the wall. I need air with her so close.
You are good at your job.
We both are. From the start we agreed that wasn't the problem. Brad set up this bullshit competition and we played right into it. Little did I know what a sexist shit show it would become, and I hate it. I do. I push off again and move back to her. But you're pretending the fucked up system of toxic masculinity is the reason you're a dick to me. When really, I think you just hate how things have changed between us.
When she doesn't respond, I lean in.
So here's the thing, Evie. If we put our heads down and do our jobs and stay out of each other's way, then we can just be colleagues. She gives me an aggressive shrug.
Okay, sounds good to me.
Colleagues, that's it, I say, and her shoulders fall a little as she gets where I'm going with this. My heart is pounding so hard. I have to pull off my suit jacket so I don't feel like I'm going to hyperventilate.
Evie watches me take it off and drop it next to us, eyes rapt as she looks back to my face.
Passing in the hallway, small talk, work emails. Whatever this is, I say, waving between us, would go away. You may not like the glitter explosion in your car, but at least you know I was thinking about you when I did it. I pause, swallowing. At least now you know I can't stop thinking about you. I can't believe I just said this. I can't believe I didn't really realize it before just now. Are we really this immature? Jesus Christ, I guess we are.
With this admission, it feels like a tight cage around my chest has been unlocked, and I can let out a huge breath.
Well, I say quietly, there's my dramatic admission for the day.
I expect her victorious evil cackle, or even awkward stunned silence, so I'm surprised when she moves up against me and slides her hand into my hair, pulling me down, down to her mouth. I am immediately, completely on board. She pulls my lower lip into her mouth, sucking and nipping just hard enough to tap a mallet to the gunpowder of my blood. My hips press forward against hers, and the sound she makes in response dumps fuel everywhere. I am on fire.
We don't have time for this. She says it into my lips even as she stretches higher, pressing into me. Even when she reaches for my hand, urging me to touch her. We don't have time for this.
Her hand is like a clamp around my wrist, dragging it down over her breast, beneath her dress, up her leg. Against my mouth, her lips feel like a holy experience, eager in a way that tells me I'm not the only one who thinks about this all the fucking time. My hand finds the lace of her underwear, sliding under, and her little gasp telegraphs her thoughts immediately. Touch me there. Get me off. Do it quickly. I laugh and thrill. Amazed at how easy she is to remember. The shape of her, the way she moves against my hand. Only the second time I've touched her, but here we are, snapping back into focus. Her hand slides down over the front of my pants, which have become their own kind of torture device,
and she giggles into my mouth. I'm sorry, she says between shallow breaths. I don't care about my fucking suit. I don't even care when her hand loses focus and slides back up my body, pulling my head against her. Her neck is warm and thrumming beneath my teeth. Half of me wants to bite her, so she comes stumbling out of this room like a screaming sex telegraph. But the other half wants her to leave the room put back together, keeping this perfect little secret after she comes around my fingers with her hands digging into my shoulders and her mouth open in that quiet, soft cry. After I slow my touch but don't pull away, Evie's eyes are closed, her face tilted up to the ceiling. With my free arm around her, I'm practically holding her up, and this mighty force in my arms somehow feels so fragile. But I like that about her. I like that when she's on alert, every tiny bit of her packs a punch. We didn't have time for this, she whispers again. Oh well. She pulls her head up, looking at me with unfocused eyes and grins. Oh well. Evie makes to move back, and I untangle my hand from her underwear, letting her go. She looks at the buttons of her dress, straightening things, running fingers through her hair. With reluctance, I bend, picking up my jacket. Thanks, she says, then bites her lip. I laugh, and this breaks her grin free. You're welcome. What the fuck happens now? She opens her mouth to speak, but a fist bangs on the door, and I swear to God all four of our collective feet leave the ground with how much it terrifies us. Carter! I clasp a hand over my chest. It's only Jonah, but I think I've just lost 3 years of my life. I lean over, opening the door. Light from the hallway spills into the dim room, and I squint over at him. What? He takes quick stock of the scene before him. We're getting some green screen shots before we move the set pieces into place. With a little grin, he adds. Thought you two might want to come out. Is everything okay? I ask. You think I'm a fucking idiot? I stare at him wordlessly. Jonah rolls his eyes and then looks past me to Evie. You must be the maddening woman. You must be the douchebag brother. He smiles, delighted. Carter's love looks a lot like hate, doesn't it? Evie unleashes her amazing cackle, and I reach forward and smack him. How did you know we were in here? Jonah turns, laughing, and heads back down the hall. He calls over his shoulder. That's where everyone goes in this studio to fuck.
Chapter 19. Evie. Monday morning meetings are going to be an issue. Carter is sitting across from me, bent head to head with Amy over a spreadsheet. I'm only now taking the time to notice that his hair has gotten a little shaggy in front, but he's kept it short on the sides and, well, I'm quite enjoying it. Today he's wearing a light blue shirt, and I don't know if it's intentional, but the top two buttons are undone, showing a nice hint of his pecs. Unfortunately, now I can't really blame him for the Evie blouse disaster of late October, because there is no way I am telling him that I can see chest below collarbone, for fear that he would remove it from my view. His sleeves are rolled up, exposing his forearms, and he's doing that fascinating trick where he flips a pen over the back of his hand. Back and forth, back and forth. He made me come with those fingers. Back and forth. My chest twists a little as I realize how hard I'm swooning and how far that will take me, because who knows what is going on between us. We sure haven't talked about what happened Friday. After Jonah found us, we left the mixing room in silence. We walked down the hall and found that our presence was completely useless anyway. Jonah and the crew had the shoot under control and we wrapped right on time. After only a brief, shared look of bewilderment, Carter went to his car, I went to mine, and we left separately. He didn't call, I didn't call, and we haven't made eye contact again. But, thankfully, we haven't melted back down into petty sabotage, either. Oh, no. I'm softening toward him again, which can mean only one thing. My defenses are down. It would probably be wise for me to make a list of all the ways he offends me on a personal and professional level. 1. He's too overtly sexy for the workplace. 2, he clearly can't button his shirts, deleted because hypocritical. 3, I look up and stare blankly at the fingers, flipping the pen back and forth across his hand. I'll compile the rest of the list later. I'm also, and I loathe saying it because I despise the cliche of two girls pitted against each other for the boy, slightly annoyed by Kylie. She's sitting at the end of the table near Brad's perch, waiting, like all of us, for the boss man to appear, but she isn't even trying to be subtle about staring at Carter. She may or may not be having an affair with Brad, but she definitely wants to bang Carter. I am 0% on board with this plan because, just before I light his tight pants on fire, I'd like to actually have sex with him. Maybe that'd get him out of my system.
How was the Vanity Fair shoot?
Brad asks, strolling into the room, and both Carter and I jump. Great, we exclaim in unison. Brad narrows his eyes at us and Carter grins.
It went off without a hitch.
I nod. No bumps.
Or grinds,
Carter adds, and stifles a grin. I stare at the table, trying to strangle down my laugh. The giddy thrill of having Carter acknowledge what we did on Friday makes me want to jump on the table and start channeling Missy Elliott. Out of the corner of my eye, I see Brad sit up.
Yeah? They got all the shots they needed,
Carter says.
Everyone left happy.
On the whole, I was very satisfied, I add. Carter coughs, and the room falls into a heavy silence. Brad's steely gaze narrows, and he glances back and forth between me and Carter, who are very pointedly not looking at each other.
What am I missing?
Nothing, we say in unison again.
I don't want to know anymore,
Brad says, turning to Ashton. Everyone is awkwardly shifting in their seats, looking at each other in silent, what do you know about this, communication. No one cares about the photo shoot. There's drama all the time at those things, but it's rarely between the agents. Now they're pigs sniffing for truffles. Our colleagues are either dying of curiosity or convinced they know something, but no one is oblivious. Not in this business. I glance over at Kylie and catch her sullen pout directed at Carter. He seems to catch it at the same time, doing a tiny double take before busying himself with something on his phone. But I don't miss the way he peeks up at me, eyes shining.
Ashton,
Brad says,
have you heard back from Joe Tierney over at Paramount?
He moved to DreamWorks last week, I say absently, tearing my attention from Carter. Everyone goes silent. It's an unspoken rule that any correcting of the boss is done way more subtly than that. Brad is top dog here. Brad is the first to know everything. That's the rule. Did I forget about that?
No, I don't think so,
Brad says, pulling his glasses lower so he can peer at me over the rims.
He's there until March.
I wince, shaking my head, inwardly telling myself to shut the hell up. The last thing I need to give Brad is another reason to dislike me. He left early, wiggled out of his contract. I try to lighten this with a little smile, but Brad just stares blankly at me for several silent seconds.
Getting out of a contract? What an interesting idea.
The room is as silent as a grave.
Thanks for the clarification,
he says, slow blinking back down to his notes and writing it down. My good mood vanishes. What have I just done? Despite the flirtation of the Monday meeting, for the rest of the week, Carter and I really do put our heads down and bust our asses. It's the end of the year, when we're all scrambling to wrap up the last few contracts before Hollywood essentially shuts down for a month around Christmas. It seems as though every time I'm in the office, Carter is at an off-site. We don't even pass each other in the halls or parking deck. To be honest, it's better this way. Having that random tension release hookup on Friday doesn't really change anything, as Brad so aptly reminded me on Monday. Looking back, I missed the beginning of the shoot while I was getting pleasured by Carter and lost some of my professional traction by being punny with him in front of the entire features department. Not to mention this little game we've been playing. Thank God we both pulled our heads out of our asses before someone lost a client, or worse. I've never put a guy before my career, although the impact of that decision sometimes needles my thoughts. If you always put career first, you will only have your career to put first. Unfortunately, in this case, it really is a choice of the job or the guy. By Friday afternoon, everyone is in the rising phase of cocktail hour. Every November, Brad hosts a tree lighting party at his house. This year's party is tonight, which adds extra oomph to the office drinking. The atmosphere outside my door is cheerful, if not yet booming. I can feel everyone's giddiness, the relief of being able to let their proverbial hair down. Unfortunately, I have about 7 calls to return and 3 contracts to pour through before I can call it a day and join the pre-party. With my door closed, I tap the space bar to wake up my computer and try not to groan out loud at the 75 new emails since I last checked only an hour ago. A quiet knock lands on my door and Carter pokes his head in. My heart takes off running and a heavy ache builds beneath my ribs and just maybe between my legs, too. I missed him this week more than I wanted to admit.
"We're all out here, hanging,"
he says, tilting his head back a little and then giving me a tentative smile. I'd rather have him sit down and just hang with me.
"Come in,"
I say, and he steps inside, nudging my door mostly closed behind him. He looks around my office for a few quiet seconds.
"How are you?"
"Good." I feel like he can probably see my heart punching me from the inside. "How are you?" Carter nods.
"I'm good. Are you gonna come out and join us?"
"I was out with a client most of the afternoon and have a few things I need to do before I can call it a day."
"Do you want me to bring you a beer?"
As if to remind me what I'd be facing out there, Brad's voice booms down the hall, causing me to grimace. The last thing I want to do is be with Mr. Team Token when I'm already stressed and buried under a to-do list the size of California.
"I'm good,"
I say. "But thanks." Carter sighs, glancing over to the door.
"Okay."
His jaw is tight, and even his frustrated profile looks amazing. Wait, why is he frustrated?
"Okay,"
I repeat, mimicking his tone.
"What's wrong?"
He looks back at me, and his expression softens a little.
"Everyone else is out there, and you're in here."
"I'm working," I say gently. It's surprising in an awesome way that he wants me out there, but he seems more irritated than sweet about it.
"I'm swamped."
This seems to frustrate him even more.
"We're all swamped. But maybe if you joined in these things, you wouldn't feel like such an outsider. I'm trying to help you, Evie. Jesus."
I try to focus on my monitor and feel a crushing bleakness in my chest when I hear him slip out of my office, back into the revelry. I'm tempted to follow, engage with honest anger for once, but am immediately choked by my own voice in my head, telling me to hold strong to that desire to be myself in this business. As soon as I give an inch, I'll lose a mile. Brad's driveway is a quarter mile long and lined with tiny, glittering lights. I've been here before. One year, his wife, an executive at Warner Brothers, threw a wrap party for a film starring one of my clients. That night, amid the champagne and hors d'oeuvres and live music, I watched Brad slip away with my actor's girlfriend. Brad caught my eye as they wound up the staircase just off the downstairs guest bathroom and knew he was busted. I guess that's one of 100 pieces of dirt I've got on him, though I never said anything to anyone. Rule 1. Get neither invested nor involved in actors' or bosses' private lives. The tires of my Prius crunch down the gravel, and I pull up in front, handing my keys off to the valet and thanking him with a smile. Memories of parties and betrayals, and the simple madness of personal relationships in this town all filter through my thoughts as I walk to the front doors, making the situation with Carter seem somehow so insignificant. We had the workplace equivalent of a couple of pillow fights and then tucked away our bratty sides and made out in a closet. Even when I do drama, I do it so tamely. I think what worries me most about it is that there's no sign of resolution anywhere. We're both on tenterhooks with the clock ticking down to the end of our contracts. And while I know I'd be devastated if I lost this position, it's not as though I would be particularly happy if Carter lost either. I might want to watch him suffer, but I don't want him to be miserable. Because you like him, my brain teases in a sneering whisper. Really, really like him. My brain is such an asshole. Brad's wife, Maxine, greets me just inside the foyer, taking my coat and telling me where to find the alcohol and, with decidedly less emphasis, the food. I never try to meticulously time my arrival at these events, but glancing around, I realize I'm one of the last to show up. Looking for my lifelines, I immediately search for Amelia, who sometimes attends these gatherings. There are only about 50 people here, but the buzz of conversation makes it sound far larger. As usual, Maxine has arranged for live music, appetizers, and flutes of champagne on trays circulated by waitstaff. The main living area is expansive and faces a backyard with a view of the Hollywood Hills. Three sets of French doors are thrown open to the night, but heaters are placed just outside, keeping the mild chill at bay. It's gorgeous. It really is. And at times like this, I'm overwhelmed with how lucky I am to be able to dip in and out of the lavish aspects of this world. It is a world of privilege and excess, and whenever I register how easy we all have it, it makes me realize how petty I am to ever complain about a few asshole personalities. By and large, the people in this room are good. This is a cutthroat business, but few of us are as terrible as our actions would lead one to believe. Insecurity and competition make us all monsters. I should know. There's no Amelia in sight, but I spot Carter with Brad across the room near the open doors. Knowing he grew up in New York, I wonder what it's like for him here in November, where we shiver when it dips below 65 and wear fur coats out to dinner. I also wonder what it's like to be celebrating with an almost entirely new team this year. The reorganization has been slow, but the first transition was deft, and the majority of the cuts were from CTM's side of the table. He's changed into a sapphire blue dress shirt, rolled up to his elbows, and exposing those forearms I alternately want to lick and amputate. I hate to think that there is some faded connection there, but I can't deny that when he looks up and sees me walking toward him, it makes my stomach flutter a little. His expression betrays his happiness to see me, and then immediately pinches inward as he returns to the conversation with Brad. It hadn't even occurred to me to come over and interrupt Carter's one-on-one time with the boss, because I wasn't coming over there for Brad. I was coming for Carter. Of course, he has no way of knowing that. But the hesitation in his face makes me hesitate, taking a detour toward the tray of wine headed in my direction. Swiping a glass, I say hello to a few colleagues and stand admiring the towering Christmas tree on the far end of the room. Each ornament is gold, but there are enormous balls and tiny balls, horses, sleighs, and snowflakes. The tree seems to shimmer beneath the warm light of the room. I can still hear Brad's voice, which is low but carries in an odd, booming way.
So you think you're up for it?
Vegas and golfing? Carter says.
I'm up for it any day of the week. Good man. With you on board, I think we've got the whole team.
A boy's golf trip to Vegas? I roll my eyes and turn to make my way over there. Things are strained enough as it is, and I know I should tread lightly, but I can't let this one slide. Hey, guys, I say.
Evie!
Brad crows, leaning in.